You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff writer at IndyCornrows.com and one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast. Sorry for the no Friday podcast and missing another day this week. That is on me. It's been a long week, but trying to make up for that for a Saturday podcast. Tony and I are still working with the schedule. We might have some updates and changes, so look for that. But besides that, Pacer basketball has been great as of late. Six straight wins, four of those at Victor Oladipo. The past two have been really solid wins against two really good teams in the Eastern Conference. And so I'm going to talk about the Philadelphia game particularly, and then I'm going to preview the Knicks game on today's podcast. So let's start with the Philadelphia game where the Pacers, well, basically thoroughly beat the Sixers in the second half of this game. The first half, they were... I'll tell you, I was shocked they started the game down 10-0, like always, and then fought their way back into it. You know, shocking that this team who has, they don't have the numbers in front of me, but this is one of the teams that is just terrible at starting games. I mean, first quarters, I feel like they're down 10, 15 points every time, always claw their way back second quarter, end up losing it down at halftime by 5 to, say, this time it was 9 points. And then second half, they somehow adjust, they figure it out, whatever it is, and they come back and kind of crush them. I mean, they outscored... somebody tweeted this ad. I think it was Big Nick is the guy who tweeted that the Pacers outscored the Sixers 64-36 in the second half. That's incredible, considering that the first half it looked like Embiid was on pace. He was on pace to score 56 points. Nobody could stop Embiid. He was backing people down. He was hitting all kinds of shots. He was getting second chance rebounds. He had 8 offensive rebounds. I mean, he was just destroying the Pacers. And he did. I mean, stat wise, he had 40 points and 21 rebounds. But second half they contained him 12 points. They really kind of contain the rest of this team, where it seemed like Simmons and Redick had, you know, okay games, but not great games. It was kind of like they let Embiid kill him and then they just kind of destroyed the bench. I mean, the Pacers just completely, destroyed Philadelphia's bench. Now you have to take it with a grain of salt because it was a Jimmy Butler-less team. So they had, I think they had Kuzmak starting in Butler's place. Or Korkmaz starting in Butler's place. And so that kind of threw off their bench. They were down a guy. They had to bring in, they played Sean Milton for 3 minutes. He doesn't play a ton. But you have to give the Pacers credit still. This is a Philly team that even without Butler still has probably had the best player on the court. I mean, Simmons, you know, at least the Oladipo we have right now where he's still, you know, recovering. You kind of can see he's still not 100% there yet. He's still kind of getting himself back into the flow of games. But the Thaddeus Young game was incredible. I mean, Thaddeus Young has been incredible for going on 5 games now. But he did a little bit of everything. Basically, he was the offensive rebound engine with 6 offensive rebounds. I remember there was one play where he got 2 offensive rebounds eventually into a basket. He wasn't missing his free throws, which is a key part of Thad's game that, you know, it's not talked about a ton, is how bad of a free throw shooter he's been so far this season. And really how bad of a just general jump shooter he's been. So if you look at his free throw percentage, I think right now he probably got it into the 60s finally. But for a while, so he's at 62%. He was hovering below 50% for a while. He's gotten that 3-point percentage up recently. It was at like 16, now it's at 25. Like, he's slowly becoming a competent player in terms of like stats, offensive stats, where you can like respect his shot. You know, teams were starting to sort of just ignore him when he got the ball in the corner for threes leaving wide open, which might be a benefit to him. So, like, if you take his last 6 games, for example, Thad is shooting 56, 40, and 82. I know that's probably not sustainable for all 82 games, but it's kind of a window into why the Pacers have been so successful in Oladipo's absence, because Thad, who I will admit, did not think he had it in him, not because of the age, but just because I didn't think Thad had the ability to kind of carry the offensive load of a team. He's averaging 20 points over that 6-game stretch. I know Turner had 2 really good games also in there, but when you don't have Oladipo, you need somebody to fill in his 20 points. I mean, we saw Bojan do that for a while, but you need another guy. And when Bojan, who's been okay, has been fantastic as of late, has been fine. He put up 18. That was a good game. But you go to the Bucks game, he wasn't fantastic either. He's kind of been, he's 16. You know, he hasn't had that 25-point outburst that they need from a guy, and they're getting it from Thad Young, really. He was kind of filling in that offensive load that Vic needs. But in terms of other players on the team in this game, I thought Sabonis played really well. If you watch the game, they closed with Sabonis because I think they trusted him more. Turner struggled all night to kind of deal with Embiid. He was getting pushed around. It just felt like Turner, I don't know what it was, but had one of those bad nights. But Sabonis was, on the other end, able to fill in the gap pretty easily and be great. Joseph had a really great, good night. I think he closed out the game as well. So they closed out with Vic, Kojo, Collison, Thad, and Sabonis. Bojan, Thad, and Sabonis. An interesting lineup. Something that we were seeing a lot before the Vic injury. Then we stopped seeing because Evans was closing games, obviously. And Collison was closing games because he's kind of the clutch closer in terms of scoring. But interesting to see they kind of revert. It's amazing to kind of revert back to their way before Vic. And I don't know that's a bad thing, you know. I was having this thought where, you know, for the 11 games Oladipo had missed, everybody kind of was able to step up a little bit. They were able to kind of show that, oh, we're not just, you know, other pieces to Vic. You know, we're guys who can be high-quality role player starters on a playoff team. And, you know, the question is, could they really sustain that for 50, 60 games? Probably not. They can probably stand it for 10 to 12. So that's why you need a guy like Vic, because he's a guy who you know can be a 20-point-a-game guy for 70, 80 games a year. Like, you just know he can sustain the success every year. I'm not sure any of the other guys have that track record of having sustained, you know, 20 points or more success, or even 18 points or more a game success. But you kind of can see that with Vic's absence, everybody's gotten a little more confident. And Vic has kind of understood his role when returning. You know, this is the first, you know, the previous game against the Bucks, I think he took all of them like 8 shots. He took 11 shots, which is pretty low for Vic. He like turned to 22. This game, he finally got to 16, but, you know, early on, he was putting up 20 a game almost in terms of shot taking. And in games like this where, you know, in certain games where guys, big games where guys really were kind of afraid to shoot or kind of do stuff, he would have to take 20 to 25 shots. But he's kind of recognizing that he has a role with this team currently, and that's to sort of ease his way back in. Let the other guys continue to play off their hot hands. And eventually Vic will get going. I'm not worried about that. And that's kind of where I wanted to go next, is Vic has not played well yet. I wouldn't be too worried the team is playing well. He is sort of, like I said, is sort of just kind of fitting into his role. He's not worrying about, you know, I need to score 25 points. He's like, okay, we're winning games. We're playing well. I'm just going to kind of be here. I'm going to kind of help guys out. I thought he was a really good kind of point guard last night. I think he really showed off his chops in the pick and roll with Thad a couple of times and Sabonis. That pass to Thaddeus Young where he flicked it kind of in between. I want to say it was in between almost Simmons and Embiid at the same time. That pass was incredible. They kind of basically sealed the game on that Thad dunk layup. I forget what it was. But if you look at the way he's playing, he's had 6 assists in the Bucks game, 9 now. I wonder, you know, I'd always thought his next evolution in his game was becoming almost like a triple-double threat. And I don't think he's going to average 10 assists a game. That's going to be hard. But, you know, a guy who's averaging 20 points and 10 assists, or 20 points, 10 rebounds, and 8 assists, or 28 and 8, let's say. Versus last year, I think he was more like 23, 6, and 5. It was not really elevating his points up, but it was elevating his ability to use his threat of scoring to set other guys up. And you really saw that in this game, where he really did a fantastic job of getting Thad in position, Sabonis in position. A couple times, even where he had a nice pass to Sabonis where he missed it. He was the facilitator where he used the threat of him being able to score and the respect he gets from defenses of like, okay, on pick and roll, we're going to swarm Vic to get out of the kind of the double team space and be able to create a pass or stuff like that, which is good to see because like I there was a worry and I had that worry a little bit that, okay, this team's playing pretty well. He comes in. Does he just sort of take back all his shots and does everybody's role diminish and then does everybody go back to revert to the pre-Vic injury or was the injury good for the team helping them develop kind of everybody hit their stride and then he kind of comes back in and fits into what is the team now, which is not a much different team. It's just a team where he can rely on other guys more. It's not, you know, before, like I said, but in the season he couldn't rely on other players. He had to just do it. He had to do it himself. He had to win games. I mean, if he didn't put up 25 points, the team had no shot. And now it feels like other guys have understood that they can step up in moments. You don't need, you know, we don't need Turner every night to have 20. But if Turner has 20 points, let's say one every 10 games, you have to get 20 points out of Thad one every 10 games, and you can kind of have this ability where Oladipo can step back and say, okay, I'll have to put up 25, 30 occasionally, but also I can kind of sit back and score 15 one night. But if I have 9 assists and, you know, everybody, I'm setting up guys right, I use my threat of the player, the respect I get, then it's all good. You know, we're gonna win games, and that's what really matters. Another player really to kind of shout out in this game, I thought, was Tyreke Evans, who wasn't fantastic in terms of his shooting, 2 of 11, but he was a positive on the court because he played with Sabonis. And I don't know what it was about Evans this game, but it felt like he was playing harder D. You know, they shut down the Philly bench. I mean, the Philly bench combined for 15 points. That's terrible for a bench. I mean, and it seemed like Evans, who, again, still can't buy a bucket at the rim and can't figure out, was really kind of pushing himself on the defensive end in a way that I thought was somewhat impressive. You know, the rest of the guys in the roster, I mean, I thought McDermott was you know, couldn't make a three-point shot, was kind of out there on the court. He was a positive again because, I mean, both these guys are playing with Sabonis, Joseph Hoover most of the time in that kind of second and third quarter runs. But I liked Evans' defense in this game. I don't know what it was about it. I just liked the fact that he was sort of, you know, he had two steals. He just seemed like he was kind of bringing an edge defensively. And I guess when he's struggling from the field, at least he has that. It's kind of like Vic. Sometimes when Vic struggles from shooting, but he still makes such a big impact on defense that he has to be on the court. I thought Evans brought a little more of that this time than I'd seen from the past. You know, he'd been doing that for a few weeks, but playing with the starters, which means he had to play more, take a bigger load offensively, which was affecting his defensive, his ability on the defensive end of the floor. I felt like this game he sort of brought a little more edge to it. And then you can't say enough good things, like I said, about really this was the Sabonis Thad game, ultimately. Sabonis had 14 and 16, Thad had 26 and 10. You can, you know, maybe throw in the fact that Bojan had 18 points. He had a, you know, pretty solid game, was hitting his three-point shot in pretty opportune times. And then, you know, Darren Collison had 8 points and 10 assists, which is always a solid night for him. Continues to sort of be okay with a diminishing offensive role in terms of scoring, but setting other guys up, and is still kind of, I don't know, the rock of this team. And I love how he went kind of got chippy with Ben Simmons. That it's you know, Simmons is like a towering figure, right? He's like 6'11". I don't know, he's probably 250 or maybe 230, maybe 230 is too much. And Collison is 6'1", 200, 210. And the fact that he was, I mean, I know Collison's like older and that, but he was getting chippy with Simmons, kind of fun to see. Because I think Simmons sometimes feels like he is the biggest player on the court, and he sees things and he can do things that almost no other player in the league can do in terms of passing and like that, and that he can kind of push around, you know, Collison, who's a smaller, you know, guard who can get swallowed up at times by Simmons. And so I think I like how Collison didn't get pushed around on him, at least in terms of, like, you know, Simmons wanting foul calls and Collison kind of telling him to shut up, basically. I thought that was really good too. But this is pretty exciting, though, for the Pacers so far. 6 straight wins, which means that hopefully as the Pacers head into Sunday, they'll be able to beat the Knicks and extend that streak to 7. Let's take a quick break, and then I'm going to preview the Knicks game. All right, the Pacers head back home from Philadelphia to play the New York Knicks. Sunday, 5 o'clock start time, early start time for a Pacer game, but I guess it's part of that Sunday. They do that a lot. They play kind of early afternoon Sunday games. The Knicks could be without most of their, core players. So I'm going to read the injury list real quick because I was kind of looking at it before the show. So you got on Friday night injury report, you got Trey Burke, who didn't play against the Hornets on Friday. You got Damon Dotson, who didn't play Friday with a shoulder. You got Frankie Nicotine, who got hurt in Friday's game with a right ankle. You got Mitchell Robinson, who left Friday's game with also an ankle. And then you got Lance Thomas, who did not play in Friday's game with a right knee soreness. And then on top of that, you got Alonzo Trier, who as of Tuesday is being evaluated next week, so definitely won't play. And then Porzingis also still out. So, you know, that's 7 guys who have played minutes for this team. So, you know, if you look at minutes per game in terms of injury, so you're looking at Dotson, who's played 26 a game and started 9. You got Trier, who has played 27 games. The Knicks are, by the way, I believe 9-21, so that's 30 games. Then you keep going through the list. Trier has played 33, has played an average of 23 minutes. We're going to 33, sorry about that. Nicotine also played 27, started 14, an average of 22.4. Trey Burke's played 21 games, started 5, averaged 20 minutes per game. Robinson has played 28, started 12, played 17 minutes per game. And Lance Thomas has played 11, started 5, and an average of 15.2 minutes per game. So if we look at their starting lineup in their last game, that was Friday against the Hornets, they started Vonleh, Knox, Kanter, Moutier, Hardaway. More of a real, real traditional big lineup. I know Knox, I guess, is listed as a small forward. I guess he plays as a small forward. I kind of view him more as a power forward, I guess, in the NBA and when he gets the right fit. But that's just interesting to look at, that that's kind of the lineup they're probably going to start. Assuming, you know, and then the bench is going to be kind of decimated to probably down to like Courtney Lee and Hazonia and Cornette, which is Luke Cornette. It's going to be interesting. That isn't, you know, that's not a great lineup. Let's put it that way. This is a game the Pacers should be able to win. I think we'll know in the first quarter to mid-second quarter whether the Pacers are going to let them hang around or going to knock them out kind of thing. They've blown up the Knicks a few times in the Victor Oladipo era. I know they did in the last game they played, obviously. But, you know, at home, I expect Pacers to go up 15 to 20 in the first half, if possible, and just sustain that lead and hopefully get, you know, some fourth quarter garbage time minutes to Aaron Holiday and Kylo Quinn and TJ Leaf and whoever else is on the roster at the moment. And whoever else they can kind of play, I guess. You know, I think Alizé is with the team currently, but I'm not 100% sure if he's actually on the active roster. Probably get some Edmund Sumner minutes, maybe. So it'll be interesting. I think hopefully that's what can happen. Obviously, with his Pacer team, you never know. They sometimes let the bad teams hang around way too long. Example, the Knicks game the first time, the Atlanta Hawks game. I think ultimately, though, they'll be able to beat the Knicks by probably 10 to 15 points, if I had to guess. The matchup I'm looking for... Sabonis once again, Kanter, well, really Sabonis and Turner, now the way Turner's been playing as of late, sans the 76ers game. Kanter basically, when he guards either Sabonis or Turner and kind of Vonleh, they kind of leave him out. So I think kind of with the opportunity to really like basically set up the court from the top of the key, that was huge to Sabonis the last time they played, because he was able to get a lot of 10-foot jump shots, and then he was able to use that that pass out of the top of the post to either roll to the rim or get momentum going to the hoop and score. So, you know, if, you know, you have Canners, let's say, sitting 10 feet back on Sabonis pick and roll, or sitting, you know, at the between the free throw line and the hoop on the Oladipo pick and roll, you get easy Sabonis baskets and stuff like that, because Sabonis can easily, when he's going downhill, even if Canners leaves him space, can beat him to the spot usually, because Sabonis is pretty nimble sometimes. It feels like he kind of can get to his spots and get to his positions and make that the ball, get the ball in the post, make a dribble and lay it in, kind of all in one motion. But that could be good for Turner too, who's playing really well of late. If they let him just shoot his three-point shot, you know, obviously he's got to make it. You know, it's a, what did I say? It's a make or miss league. But the way Turner's played of late, you know, he gets that open three-point shot, he's probably going to make it. You know, if you look at his last... let's say five games, let's take it. You take his last five games, and he is shooting an amazing 71% from three. Granted, that's on, I think that's 10 of, what would that be, 10 of 12 or 10 of 14, you know, 10 of 14 attempts or whatever. But, you know, if you, he can get five attempts, make three of them, that's pretty game-changing. He can easily get himself to 15 to 20 points. They're comfortable rebounding. Kanter always destroys them on the glass. The last time they played, Kanter was just, I think he had close to 20 rebounds. Let me look it up real fast. But so we'll have to deal with that, that Kanter is going to be kind of destroying them. But the good thing about Kanter is he's not a great putback shooter, at least hasn't been against the Pacers. So if he gets a couple offensive rebounds, he won't be able to put it in. Last game, Vonleh was the one who really killed them from the glass. He had 10. Kanter only had 6 rebounds. But if I'm dating myself back to the previous Pacer games in 2017-18, Kanter had a couple good games against the Pacers in terms of double-digit rebounding. Especially if he starts, he might have a good chance at kind of destroying them on the glass, pushing Turner around possibly. And then the other kind of guy to watch is Hardaway, who had 37 points when they played the Pacers. Frankly, he's the only guy who's going to take a ton of shots. So if he takes 25 shots and gets 37 points, last time he didn't, took 19. But if he takes 25 shots and gets 37 points, let him have it, and you still probably win by 10 or 15. On the other Pacer end, I guess it's... will this be an Oladipo game, I guess, is the question. You know, I think until that Knicks game earlier this year, Oladipo hadn't had that signature moment yet, I guess, in the season. Granted, they only played 8 games, so it's fine. And they were kind of iffy. They were 5-3. I mean, they were fine. They just weren't fantastic like they are right now. So last time Vic played the Knicks, he had a signature, moment. He hit the clutch three to kind of seal the game. And so can Vic have, you know, a 30-point game, or will this be a game, like I said, where it's so such a blow and so evenly distributed that the Pacers, you know, Vic ends up with 15, but every guy ends up with 15 to 20 almost, you know. One of the signature, like, 10 players in double figures, or what was it? Or all their starters plus, you know, Sabonis in double figures kind of thing. That'd be really interesting to see if that happens. But I'm pretty optimistic on the Pacers winning this game. They have that day off in between. That'll be nice. Between the Philly game, they just haven't lost as of late, and until this team loses, I guess, I can't pick them to lose. Unless they play the Warriors, but, like, they haven't lost to a bad team yet this year. They haven't had, like, a bad loss. And I don't think it's going to start now. So the Pacers win probably, I'm about to guess, score right now, 115-100. You know, I think they go up by 25, but the Knicks claw their way back to, like, a 10- or 15-point game. That's all I got for today's podcast. Tony and I will be back on Monday. I promise that. I know I've told other podcasts that Tony and I will be on. Well, I'm only going to promise that we'll be on the show Monday. We'll record after the next game, most likely. So we'll do the whole week for next week. Hopefully we'll be back to 5 podcasts during the week. We might do a little differently. We do 4 during the week and 1 on the weekend. We'll kind of play it by ear. I know we're getting close to Christmas and to New Year's. So there might be some scheduling kind of changes or, you know, missed days because of all that kind of holiday stuff. But promise you, once we get into the new year, get back to a more consistent schedule, we'll have it for you guys. We'll let you guys know what it is. As always, you can follow our podcast on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. You guys should also look at other Locked On podcasts out there. You know, Locked On NBA, Tony was on that one, I believe, last week. Locked On Fantasy, for all really good NBA coverage. You know, check those out. That is all for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, have a great rest. Yeah.